Kshetrasi Jagannath Puri Dhama ki, Ganga Maji Jamuna Mai ki, Bhakti Devi Shrimati Tulsi Maharani ki, the most beautiful lordship, Shishi Kishore Kishori ki, Paramakaruna, the most merciful lordship, Shishi Gauranitai ki, Sri Jagannath, Sri Baladev, Shrimati Subhadra Maharani ki, Garantara Shimam Bhagavatam ki, Sri Harinam Sankirtan Jagyaki Itai Gaura Premanandi. Oh, glories to the assembled devotees. Oh, glories to the assembled devotees. Oh, glories to the assembled devotees. Oh, glories to Sri Siguru and Sri Gauranga.
Cross the ocean of material suffering and obtain the mercy of Krishna. My only wish is that my conscience is purified by the words emanating from the lotus mouth. Attachment to his lotus feet is the perfection that fulfills all desires. He opened my darkened eyes and filled my heart with transcendent knowledge. He is my Lord, birth after birth. From him is started prema emanence. By him is destroyed. The Vedic scripture see on his character. Our spiritual master is the ocean of mercy, the friend of the poor, and Lord and Master of his devotees. O Master, be merciful unto us. Give us a share of your lotus feet, your famous scroll over the three worlds. We take shelter in your lotus feet.
Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Gopi jana valabha kiri varadhari. Gopi jana valabha kiri varadhari. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Kunja Bihari.
Vishnupad Paramahamsa Parivajakacharya Astotarasata Sri Srimad Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Kid Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam Kid. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Sri Guru and Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Agyana Timurandasya Agyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manopishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vancha Kalpatarupyastya Kripa Sindhubhya Evaja Patitanam Pavanibhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhaktivinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. Krishna. I think it was the first time I'm ever giving class in front of Subal Prabhu or Krishna Krishna Mataji, so please give your blessings. So we're reading from the seventh canto, chapter 9, text 47. We'll also read 48. Rupe ime sarasati tava veda srishte. Bijan kurav iva na chanyara rupakasya. Yukta samaksham upayatra vichakshante tvam. Yogena vanim diva darushu nanyata syat. Rupe ime sarasati tava veda srishte. Bijan kura viva na chanyara rupa kasya. Yukta samaksham ubhayacha vichakshante tvam. Yogena vanim iva darushu nanyata syat. Rupe me sarasati tava veda srishte. Bijan kura viva na chanyara rupa kasya. Yukta samaksham upayatra vichakshante tvam. Yogena vanim iva darushu nanyata syat. Rupe ime sarasati tava veda srishte. Bijan kurava vana chanyara rupa kasya. Yukta samaksham ubhayacha vichakshante tvam. Yogena vanim iva darushu nanyata syat. mothers. Rupe me sarasati tava veda srishte. Bijankaravavanachanyadarupakasya. Yukta samaksham abhayacha vichakshante tvam. Yogena vanimivadarushinanyatasyat. Rupe ime sarasati tava veda srishte. Bijan kuraviva nachanyara rupakasya. Yukta samaksham upayacha vichakshante tvam. Yogena vani mivadarushunandatasyat rupe. In the forms, ime. These two, sat asati, the cause and the effect. Tava, your, Vedasrishte, explained in the Vedas. Bija ankurau, the seed and the sprout. Eva, like, na, never. Cha, also, anyat, any other, arupakasya, of you who possess no material form. Nyukta, those engaged in your devotional service. Samaksham, before the very eyes. Ubhayatra, in both ways, spiritually and materially. Vichakshante, can actually see. Tvam, you, yogena, simply by the method of devotional service. Vanim, fire. Eva, like. Darushu, in wood. Na, not. Anyataha, from any other means, syat, it is possible. Translation. By authorized Vedic knowledge, one can see that the forms of cause and effect in the cosmic manifestation belong to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. For the cosmic manifestation is his energy. Both cause and effect are nothing but energies of the Lord. Therefore, O my Lord, just as a wise man, by considering cause and effect, can see how fire pervades wood, those engaged in devotional service understand how you are both the cause and effect. Purport. As described in the previous verses, many so-called students of spiritual understanding follow the 10 different methods known as Mauna, Vrata, Shruta, Tapo, Dhyayana, Sva, Dharma, Vyakya, Raho, Japa, Samadhaya. These may be very attractive, but by following such methods, one cannot actually understand the real cause and effect, and the original cause of everything, janmadyasya yataha. The original source of everything is the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself, sarvakaranakaranam. The original source of everything is Krishna, the Supreme Ruler. Ishvara parama Krishna sachidananda vigraha. He has his eternal spiritual form. Indeed, he is the root of everything. Bijamam sarvabhutanam. Whatever manifestations exist, their cause is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This cannot be understood by so-called silence or by any other hodgepodge method. The Supreme Cause can be understood only by devotional service, as stated in Bhagavad Gita, Bhaktyamam Abhijanati. Elsewhere in Srimad Bhagavatam, 11.14.21, the Supreme Godhead personally says, Bhaktyaham Ekaya Graha. One can understand the original cause of all causes, the Supreme Person, only by devotional service, not by show bottle exhibitionism. So just a reminder from yesterday of the 10 prescribed methods on the path of liberation that are being referred to in this verse. So one is to remain silent, not to speak to anyone, to observe vows, to amass all kinds of Vedic knowledge, to undergo austerities, to study the Vedas and other Vedic literatures, to execute the duties of Varnashram Dharma, to explain the Shastras, to stay in a solitary place, to chant mantras silently, and to be absorbed in trance. So these are the ones that Prahlad Maharaj is referring to in this verse. Or Prabhupada is referring to in the purport. Then we'll go on and read the next one because it's kind of related. Text 48, translation. O Supreme Lord, you are actually the air, the earth, fire, sky, and water. You are the objects of sense perception, the life airs, the five senses, the mind, consciousness, and false ego. Indeed, you are everything, subtle and gross. The material elements and anything expressed, either by words or by the mind, are nothing but you. Purport, this is the all-pervasive conception of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which explains how he pervades everywhere and anywhere. Sarvam kalvidam brahma. Everything is Brahman, the Supreme Brahman, Krishna. Nothing exists without him. As the Lord says in Bhagavad Gita, maya tatam idam sarvam. Jagad avyakta murtina matstani sarvabhutani nachaham teshvavastitaha. Quote, I exist everywhere and everything exists in me, yet I am not visible everywhere. End quote. The Lord can be visible only through devotional service. Tatra tishtahami narada yatragayanti madbhakta. The Supreme Lord stays only where his devotees chant his glories. Okay, so this is, again, it's Prahlad Maharaj continuing his prayers, and this particular point he's bringing out in these couple verses is a glorifying the Supreme Nrsingh, the Lord, for being everything. So, although the Lord doesn't have any material forms, he is everything. He's the both the cause and the effect. So the example is given of he's both the seed and the plant. He's both the cause and the effect. He's the earth. He's the elements. He's the mind and senses. He's everything. So he's the cause of everything. The only way to really understand this, that Prahlad points out many, many times throughout this whole chapter, this and to understand Krishna in general, is through devotional service. So through devotional service, you can understand these things more clearly. And all these other methods that was mentioned in the previous verse, you might not be able to actually understand the real cause and effect. You might not be able to understand Krishna properly only by doing these other methods. So, in the end of the purport, end of verse 47, Prabhupada says that he almost like compares these 10 processes, you know, that we just listed earlier, to show bottle exhibitionism. That's about what they are without devotional service. So I did a little. So if you type in what does show bottle mean in Google, then you'll find out that nobody uses this term, show bottle. That this word show bottle is almost exclusively used by Prabhupada. Because you'll see that, you know, if you do this, do your search, it'll, Prabhupada is the only one that actually uses this term. You can, yeah, because you'll see like Vani Pedia or whatever, Prabhupada uses it all the time, and there's just different Hare Krishna websites where Prabhupada uses the term show bottle. But you don't actually see the meaning anywhere, or anybody else uses this, so it's kind of like a Prabhupada term, I'm thinking. So show bottle, I guess the way I've heard this described is like, you know, if you have like a, if there's like a display in like a store or something, and then you have like a show bottle, something that you display, but it doesn't have any actual like substance in the display. It's just like a bottle with nothing in it. So it shows you the product. It's like a show bottle, but there's really nothing, no substance to it. So then that's kind of what's being compared to these methods when they're done as a show, but there's really no devotional service or bhakti in these methods of, you know, remaining silent and doing different kind of tapasya and different things. It's just a show bottle. And then exhibitionism is another word that I looked up. That just means like this extravagant display that's extravagant behavior that's meant to draw attention to yourself. So show bottle exhibitionism means when you do an extravagant behavior with no real substance in your behavior, and you do that in order to draw attention to yourself. So I was just thinking of some examples of this type of behavior. I'm sure we can maybe think of some of these examples, but the first one that comes up was just this Pondraka. Everyone know Pondraka? You don't know Pondraka? Okay. So Pondraka, he is a friend of Jarasandha. So he's like one of the kings that were kind of enemies of Krishna. Because I guess Krishna killed Jarasandha, and so all of Jarasandha's friends were all mad at Krishna. And Pondraka was one of the other kings who was Jarasandha's friend. So Pondraka, he just didn't like the fact that Krishna was the Supreme Personality of Godhead, or that people were considering him the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So he declared himself to be God. He declared himself to be the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And I heard that he like pasted on two extra arms to show that he's Vishnu. I'm Vishnu. And look, I got four arms to prove it. And so then he was trying to convince people that Krishna is not actually God, but I am. I'm Vishnu. So then Pondraka was bold enough to send one of his messengers to go see Krishna and tell Krishna that, hey, this is a message from Pondraka or whatever, that he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And then Krishna just laughed because it was such a ridiculous idea. But there's an example of like show bottle exhibitionism, because here he is, he's trying to draw attention to himself through this extravagant behavior. And the ultimate result of this was that Krishna came and just chopped his head off with it, you know. So that was one example from the Krishna book. Then there's some examples in like Prabhupada Lila, where sometimes there was this one devotee. He was this really, really good singer. He's a disciple of Prabhupada. He's a really, really good singer. And I don't know, I guess he was describing in his memories of Prabhupada that, you know, sometimes he felt a little puffed up a little bit, you know, that he was the singer and, you know, he was the main one that kind of got fired up kirtans going. And so during one of the Guru Pujas, I think, maybe it was in the even of Vyas Puja, I don't know, of Prabhupada, he kind of like had devotees make way for him to come up and lead the Guru Puja song, the Guru Manana prayers. So then he started singing like, and he was saying that what his mentality was when he was singing, that he was actually kind of doing it kind of like a display, kind of puffed up that I'm kind of the one doing this. And then he started, Shri Guru Charana. And he went like really all out, really very extravagant behavior, like just, it was kind of flamboyant way of singing this, or like extreme way of singing this prayer. So then Prabhupada just kind of stopped him immediately and just said, can I get somebody else to sing, you know? And then he felt like kind of humbled because Prabhupada caught the mood or whatever, his showbottle exhibitionism, you know, a little bit. And he got corrected, and he said it was nice how he got corrected. And so then another example I heard, I think this was, I don't remember all the details of this one, but I think it was in Harisori Prabhu's diary. And I guess there, maybe it was him or some other devotee, they were fanning Prabhupada, you know, very like all over the place, you know, like fancy, you know, all the moves and the spins and the everything. But it wasn't so effective. It didn't really have any like, it wasn't helping the situation, wasn't fanning actual Prabhupada, wasn't doing anything. It was just a show. And then so Prabhupada said, you know, come on, you can do it better than that, you know, just, you know, normal fanning, please. And then, so then I guess that devotee did it again, but he was going so, because he just got humbled. So now he was just going so slowly that it was also useless, you know. So then, he was doing it too extravagantly, then he was doing it too slowly, both were useless. And then Prabhupada just said, you're useless. And then he kind of had somebody else to do the fanning. So that was another good example. And then another example that I was thinking of was the, I guess sometimes when like the devotees were in India and they were doing kirtan, you know, the American devotees were in India. So sometimes or once there was this person that came in during kirtan and started like convulsing, you know, falling on the floor, looking like they're experiencing these high states of ecstasy and going all out, you know, pretending like they're or somehow exhibiting something. And so then the Prabhupada disciples are like, whoa, he must be advanced or something. He's so, look at him, he's going nuts in kirtan. But then Prabhupada just said, you know, he told one of his disciples, go over and kick him, you know. So then they actually kicked him because Prabhupada could tell that it was just a show. There was no like realness to that, those feelings that that person was having, feelings that that person was having. So these are some examples of show bottle exhibitionism that perhaps, you know, either you can, you know, weren't like the most ideal, or that they, you know, they learned a lesson from, or things like that. So then I was just contemplating the idea, is there such a thing as, you know, anyway, the whole class, I'm just thinking about this show bottle exhibitionism phrase. And I was just thinking about, does this exist in the spiritual world? Because everything in the material world comes from the spiritual world, and whatever goes on in the material world is just a perverted reflection of what goes on in the spiritual world. So then when I was thinking about this show bottle exhibitionism idea, the first spiritual personality that popped into my mind was Madhu Mangal. So if anyone's read anything about Madhu Mangal, but he's this very, very, he does a lot of extravagant behavior, which a lot of times draws attention to himself. Usually when he's there, he's like front, he's like the center of the show. So sometimes. Of course, he also, you know, he's Krishna's friend, and the idea is that when he's the center of the show, it's actually meant to be a glorification of Krishna. And so I've got some examples of this in Navavraja Mahima, where Madhu Mangal does this extravagant behavior, and it draws attention to himself. That's like the, and it might be, maybe even the purpose is to draw attention to himself, but that move is ultimately meant to glorify Krishna and give attention to Krishna. So that's, we'll see how that works. So I've got some examples here. Well, first I'm just going to give the example of, you know, we heard the example of Pondraka, who tried to claim that he was Vishnu and got killed. So Madhu Mangal actually did the same thing. He also pretended to be Krishna. Of course, he did it in a favorable way, but nevertheless, when you try to be Krishna, there is sometimes some unintended consequences. So, I'm just going to read something here. This was when, this is the whole Keshi demon pastime. So, right before the Keshi demon pastime happened, there was Madhu Mangal and Krishna. They were having a little powwow, and Madhu Mangal thought it would be a good idea if, you know, if I dress up as you, Krishna, then I could go around and I could convince all the residents of Raja to give us or give me more sweets. You know, because if I'm you, they'll probably give more than if I go and beg. So then Krishna was convinced somehow. So then Krishna ended up allowing Madhu Mangal to dress up like him, like a chubby version of him, and then he went around and he started going door to door begging for sweets. So now there's two Krishnas in Vraja going on at this point, and then right around this time, the Keshi demon was sent by Kamsa to go and try to kill Krishna. But the Keshi demon, he didn't really know what Krishna looked like. He just knew that he had a golden dhoti or whatever, and a peacock, and, you know, the certain features that now Madhu Mangal also had. So then when Keshi demon came, he saw Madhu Mangal and he thought, oh, that must be Krishna, and he was about ready to go kill him. But then Krishna came and saved the day, So, anyway, the whole point of this was that because Madhu Mangal drew attention to himself, he got attention of the Keshi demon too. So when we try to draw attention to ourselves, it's not exactly a good correlation, but when we try to draw attention to ourselves and there's not Krishna in the center, then sometimes we might draw, you know, unwanted things our way. So generally it's always nice to, whenever attention is coming to us, we kind of, it shouldn't necessarily go to us, but we should immediately think that this attention really doesn't belong to me, it belongs to my spiritual master, belongs to Krishna. So then immediately when somebody gets a compliment like that, then they just kind of pass it along. So that's more or less what I was going to say from that pastime. Then there's some other ones where Madhu Mangal also exhibits some pretty extravagant behavior, drawing attention to himself. And this one is when Krishna, you know, this is underneath the hill, you know, and Krishna lifted Govardhan Hill. There's all these wonderful pastimes going on between Krishna and all of the inhabitants of Vraja. And very, very many, many sweet exchanges that were going on. And, you know, Krishna was certainly the center of every all the interactions there. So Madhu Mangal, he used this opportunity to try to have this spiritual show bottle exhibitionism. He put it in practice underneath the hill. So I'll just read a little bit here. So, to relieve Krishna of the intensity of having to share loving exchanges with so many devotees at once, you know, because loving relationships, I mean, for us, loving relationships is like a, it's kind of like a big task. It's like a, you know, just to have one good, solid, loving relationship is like, consumes all of our time and attention, and it's hard enough as it is. Now imagine having to have a loving relationship with all the resonance of Vraja all at once. So Madhu Mangal was thinking, wow, okay, that might be a lot of, you know, effort that you need, that Krishna is exhibiting potentially. So then Madhu Mangal thought to lighten Hari's heart by speaking some humorous words. So he said, this is Madhu Mangal speaking, "Oh friend, when you have me as an ally, saturated with immeasurable Brahma Tejas," so he's talking about himself having immeasurable Brahma Tejas, "why take the trouble to hold up this puny hill? Here, let me have it. I can effortlessly balance it on the tip of my stick." So these are words that draw attention to yourself. If somebody were to say this, it'd be like, who do you think you are? So from time to time, Madhu's prattle would stir Krishna's parents from their meditation and stroke the smoldering fire of anxiety, causing the smoke of loving quarrel to bring tears to everyone's eyes. Yashoda scolded Krishna, "Son, due to uncontrolled senses, you always act impudently. First you provoked the demons by killing their leaders, and now you have angered the demigods by offending Indra." Krishna's mother reached up to take her son's butter-soft hand and continued, "Your audacity has forced you to hold up this mountain in desperation, and so you suffer. Oh Lord, please save us." So Madhu Mangal cast a wry smile at Krishna and said to Mother Yashoda, "Mother, why chastise Krishna unfairly? If angry Indra had not attacked us, then how could we relish the sweetness of seeing Krishna lift Govardhan Hill?" Yashoda turned to face Madhu and replied, "Foolish imp." Imp means like young person. "Foolish imp, what is so sweet about a frail young boy struggling to hold up a gigantic mountain? Oh, Shiva, the very thought of it makes me lightheaded." Krishna's mother looked up at Govardhan Hill, put her palms together, and with tears streaming from her eyes said, "Oh, Giriraj, please be compassionate and grant me a boon. If you are in fact a worshipful deity, then please do something to become soft and weightless, so that my little boy Krishna will not feel any discomfort. Oh, Honorable One, such is my request." Krishna tried to reassure Yashoda, "Mother, why are you worrying? I've already told you, Giriraj is floating by his own power. Nothing could be more delightful for me than acting as an instrument of his will." Yashoda replied, "My dear son, you may be enjoying yourself, but you must be getting tired by now. I will only believe what you say when Govardhan leaves your hand and hovers in the sky by himself." Madhu injected, "Oh, queen, don't you know that this mountain rests weightless on Krishna's finger by the strength of my mantras and austerities? And they are also soothing his upright arm." So this is Madhu Mangal, again, drawing attention to himself. "I'm the one who's doing all this for my mantras." Irate, Yashoda snapped, "Impertinent boy, I am burning in anxiety over my headstrong son, who is suffering because he never listens to good counsel, and all you do is make jokes and play the fool." So again, now there's some attention going to Madhu Mangal, but it's ultimately meant to serve Krishna, you know, because he had this whole desire that he would try to help, you know, relieve some of the lighten Hari's heart by, you know, kind of having loving relationships with other devotees. So then Nanda Maharaj, he had to step in, and he saw that his wife was losing her temper, and so he spoke to Madhu's defense. "Why scold Batu?" was Madhu Mangal. "Experts in diplomacy often use amusing words to ease the tension of trying situations." So that's what Madhu Mangal was doing. And Nanda Maharaj was supporting Madhu Mangal. Nanda Maharaj continued, "Madhu Mangal's speech fits the necessity of the moment. Besides, our son very much appreciates the boy's humor. You should reward him, not chastise him." So, anyway, I thought that was a good example of this point. And then there's one more example that I wanted to bring up with Madhu Mangal. And this is another pastime which drew attention to Madhu Mangal, although he didn't want it. He didn't want the attention, but just because of the nature of who he is and how he is, he gets a lot of attention. That's just, no matter what, that's like he's the one who gets the attention. And he got the attention, in this particular example, he got the attention at his own expense. Like he kind of acted as the fool, and that brought happiness to Krishna. So anyway, so then I'll just read this little pastime here. Maybe some of you have heard of it. So Krishna and the Gopas were hanging out, and then the Gopas embraced Krishna. They chided him for leaving them for so long and inquired about what he had been doing. So Krishna responded by hinting that there's something valuable that is hidden in Madhu Mangal's scarf. So Madhu Mangal had received some very special sweets from Jatila in gratitude for his brahminical services. Unwilling to share them with anyone, he concealed his reward by tying it in a knot in his scarf. So Madhu Mangal didn't want attention because he wanted all the sweets to himself. But Krishna was pointing out that he's got sweets in that scarf. So Madhu Mangal, but after Krishna tipped the boys off to Madhu's edible treasure, Balaram approached the comical king of the Brahmanas and probed. So Balaram is approaching Madhu Mangal. Madhu, tell us, what do you have concealed in that cloth? Madhu Mangal curtly replied, "Prasad of the sun god." Suspicious of Baladev's intentions, Madhu Mangal has tucked his treasure under his arm as Balaram continued. So he's looking a little nervous here, like, "What's just prasad? Leave me alone." "From where did you get such treats?" Balaram asked him. Madhu tucked the sweets even tighter under his armpit and replied, "I satisfied the good people of Vraja by performing sacrifices. Out of gratitude, they have justly rewarded me for my brahminical labor." And then Balaram persisted, "Let me see what it is." And then Madhu Mangal could sense his impending doom. Then he determined to conceal his treasure, so he replied, "No, you and your friends are voracious and greedy." You know, like, you speak like this, it draws attention to you. It's very. Madhu's voice shook. "Just by seeing my prasad, you will lust after it." But Balaram was not deterred. "Why are you so greedy? Keep a portion for yourself and share the rest with your friends." Raising his head and sticking out his chest in pride, Madhu Mangal declared, "Friends, at this time I am not inclined to partake of this heavenly preparation myself, nor will I share any of it with you." Balaram stepped closer to Madhu and whispered to him in mock confidence, "These boys are agitated by hunger. They will take your sweets by force. Better offer them some to pacify their appetites." So then now Madhu Mangal's feelings were hurt. He replied disdainfully, "I consider your friends as less significant than blades of grass." Yeah. "Neither do I think very highly of you, Balaram." A prince without a throne. Ooh. These are good ones. I mean, these are. So as Madhu Mangal rambled on, Balaram signaled to the cowherd boys, who quietly surrounded Madhu Mangal, the Brahmin boy, and then requested that he share some of his prasad with them. So now Madhu Mangal is surrounded, and he's holding the prasad tight. So Madhu Mangal still adamantly refused. To more securely protect his wealth, he rolled the scarf containing the prasad into the creases at the waist of his dhoti and crossed his arms defiantly. So I guess he tried to, like, really tuck it in, and now it's in his dhoti now. So suddenly, one boy came up from behind and covered Madhu Mangal's eyes with his hands. And then another boy deftly removed the from around the Madhu's waist the scarf that held the prasad. So it was like a tag team to try to get the prasad from Madhu Mangal. So while Madhu Mangal ranted in protest, decrying the gopas and their unrefined qualities, the thieves ran hither and thither, each snatching their share of the loot and making a great show of their pleasure. So now this is another example of even the other cowherd boys exhibiting this show bottle exhibit, making a show. And it was all super pleasing, even though Krishna wasn't like seemingly in the center of this, but it was really, really pleasing to Krishna. Meanwhile, one boy came from behind and untucked the back fold of Madhu's dhoti. So they took off his dhoti almost. As Madhu reached around to fix it, another boy came and opened the front fold, exposing Madhu's underwear. In retaliation for this insult, Madhu Mangal aimed a volley of abusive words at the conspirators, further inciting them to knock off his turban, untie his shika, and steal his flute and stick. Madhu laughed, cried, growled, scolded, and cursed, and while attempting to hold up his dhoti with one hand, his face glowing red, he grabbed Krishna's stick and clumsily chased the boys. Some gopas stood their ground, parring and fencing with Madhu, awkwardly waving their sticks in the air. Finally, Krishna diplomatically restrained his friends and embraced the angry Brahmana boy. So Krishna hugged Madhu Mangal. Krishna gave back Madhu's stick and flute, replaced his turban, retied the dhoti around his chubby waist, and returned the plundered scarf with a few crumbs of the sacred prasad left still in its fold. His afternoon snack entirely consumed, Madhu Mangal cursed the boys. "You have stolen, by force, the property of a pure-hearted Brahmana and eaten the prasad given to him as dakshina. You are all impure, whimsical, and arrogant. I shall now return to Vraj and tell everyone about your impudence." And Balaram affectionately wrapped his arms around Madhu, but it was of no use. He was pretty mad. Even a little amends wouldn't make Madhu Mangal feel better. "You," yelled Madhu Mangal, "you are responsible for these boys' sins. You instigated their rebellion against the established Shastric order." Pursuing his lips and tucking his thumbs into his belt, he concluded, "I will not speak to any of you until you have begged for my pardon, atoned for your sins, changed your ways, and," Madhu added, "compensated for your offenses with 1,000 bundi ladus." So, here's a little picture, in case you're, I don't know if you can see it, but Madhu Mangal kind of, yeah, he's the one with the angry face in the middle. So, anyway, you can come look at it later if you want. It's kind of small. So, anyway, I thought I would just share these little pastimes about what I show bottle exhibitionism. So, does anyone like to add anything? I believe.
Hare Krishna, thank you for your class. Some very nice points. I guess they were the original trash talkers, so that was nice.
Madhu Mangal's the original trash talker?
Yeah, and they were, that's where Yo Mama Joes came from. But some of the questions I have was related to some points that were made yesterday. But essentially, I want to connect this, some of my points to the verse of today, where it says that Krishna is the cause of all causes, right? So basically the foundation of my points and question is the pastime Vriga Muni, especially when it's mentioned in the Chaitanya Bhagavad. This is in the third section. There's only three sections. The third section, chapter 9, the end of it. It basically says that how I'm relating how Krishna is the cause of all causes. That pastime says that Krishna entered the body of Vriga Muni and forced him to disrespect his superiors, Brahma, Vishnu, and of course himself. Brahma, Shiva, and Vishnu. And I also want to relate it to the point where some nice point that Bhaktisiddhanta made. He said in Bhaktisiddhanta Vaibhava, Volume 1, the chapter entitled Revolutionary Preacher of Truth. He says, when the Lord is merciful to me, he will send, you know, countless people to disrespect me, basically. You know, many Bhrigumunis, whether they're influenced by Maya or not. So I really appreciate that point. So my question is related from, this is my foundation, my question is related to yesterday's topic of being quiet. Like when you speak to your spiritual master, you know, sometimes it's better not to say anything. And I find a kind of some discrepancy with that point also, because a lot of times people are afraid not to say anything. Like when you go to a doctor and you have a disease, the doctor will tell you, okay, what's your disease? And what, are you gonna be quiet? So when we go to the spiritual mind, a lot of times I feel like people are afraid to ask questions or say something because, you know, they're afraid of what people would think of me. I don't want them to know. So I feel like that's, you know, kind of detrimental to one's consciousness when one is always in fear of saying anything. Because if we say something, then yes, the spiritual master or someone may know that, okay, there's a problem, if there is a problem. But if we don't say anything, we may think we're getting rid of our narcissists, but they still remain. And we develop no devotion for Krishna, but remain, you know, continuing our narcissists. So can you elaborate on that point a little bit? I have maybe some few more.
Sure. The idea is that the principle here, nectar of instruction, is that you should reveal your mind and confidence, as part of what's favorable for devotional service, particularly to like the spiritual master, to senior devotees. And if you're afraid to, like, if you have something that's really burning inside of you, that you like a doubt or a question or something in you that you're afraid to ask because it might be whatever, controversial, or it might expose you for your own anarthas, or whatever the reason for your fear of asking that question, it's much better to, it might be tough, but it's much better to just say it, get it out in the open, because what happens, there's this one, I've said this many times, but there's this story there's this one guy, this king, he had this rule. He meant in his kingdom, no hunting in this particular forest. So then there's this one guy in the kingdom who was hunting in that forest. So he shot some jackal or whatever with an arrow, and then he was going to pick it up, and then he saw that the king was coming through the forest to survey his kingdom or something. So then that hunter was like, oh no, I'm gonna get caught because I just shot this jackal in the forest. So then what he did was he hid the animal or whatever underneath his cloth to try to hide the fact that he just killed the animal in the forest. So then the king came and then, oh, hi king, how's it going? I'm not hunting or anything here. You know, okay, I'll be on my way now. But all the while he was talking with the king, he noticed that there was all this like blood going down his cloths, and then when he realized that it was actually his own blood that was coming down, because the jackal wasn't dead, he was just trying to conceal it underneath his cloth. So then this jackal is compared to doubts or whatever issues that you have going on inside you, that if you just keep it hidden and you keep it like to yourself and you don't expose it, it will just eat you away inside, and it'll not be healthy for your own growth, your own Krishna consciousness, so it's advised that you bring it out in the open, whatever it is, your fears, your doubts, your concerns, your questions, whatever. You bring it out. When you're more open about what your consciousness is like, what you're thinking, how you're processing things, then now the enemy is exposed. You know, how are you going to deal with an enemy if you don't even know where it is or what it is? But if you say it, now the enemy is exposed, now you can do something about it. And the spiritual master will be expert at addressing those doubts and clarifying that. You just have to do it. And then, just try not to be afraid of saying what's going on inside. And as long as you're respectful and you're not doing it in like an offensive way or something, you should say how you're feeling.
Oh, my point is appreciating your point, but that's related to that last point because that's relative. Like, for example, I'm sure you heard the example of that Prabhupada, I think Prabhupada gave this example that a cobra with a diamond on it, on its hood, is more dangerous than a cobra that's completely exposed, something like that, right? Have you heard that example or something?
In the Isha Upanishad, it was there to, I think it was an example for education, like modern education.
Yeah.
Like modern education is like the, I think that's what it has, the cobra with the jewel on it.
So that goes to your point of as long as you're respectful, and respect has nothing to do with externals, but internal. So that, like, for example, somebody may be disrespectful. That's why I like this Bhrigu Muni pastime, because it deals with all three levels of disrespect. You may be disrespectful in publicly. You may be disrespectful by slandering people's character behind their back, or you may be disrespectful in the mind. Just like many years, people, a lot of times, sometimes when people see devotees fall down, they're like, what happened? You know, they were so quiet, so humble. And then they find out, no, they're actually slandering people's character behind their back, you know, typing everything and so many stuff. And that goes to the past on Bhrigu Muni. When we hear the qualities of devotee, I think that's why Bhaktisiddhanta said real humility is never found in an external show of humility, which is actually mere duplicity. One's humility depends on one's consciousness. And we see that in so many examples in like Vichrasura and so many other examples. So sometimes people, that's relative, people may take it as disrespectful. Like a devotee is not one who, you know, exclusively wears a dhoti. A devotee depends on one's consciousness within, just like we see Vichrasura pastime. So I find that that's what's kind of causes a lot of discrepancies between devotees, that they see too much externally, like all materialists. I mean, we're all materialists. We're in a material world. Is that they don't see the essence. So that's why I love this Bhrigu Muni pastime, because it says that one who criticizes devotees like Bhrigu Muni, thinking him to be disrespectful, then he'll fall down. So maybe you'll elaborate on that point a little bit. Or
yeah, when you're dealing
so
with...
So it's like relative, as central questions that we see the qualities of a Vaishnava, but there's a million exceptions that, okay, just, you know, sit back and don't criticize. Let Krishna do the criticism, because he can see inside out. We're seeing outside in. And so somebody may take it as disrespectful, but ultimately Krishna knows with our Samsidhir Hari Toshna whether we're pleasing him. So a devotee doesn't mean you don't raise your voice. You know, we shouldn't allow anybody, you know, to tell us how we should express our Krishna consciousness. If people take it as disrespectful, you know, that's their problem. We shouldn't, you know, live our lives. Our problem is our intentions. You know, if I'm not hoping no one falls down, if I'm hoping that everyone has the highest devotion with Krishna, then it shouldn't matter how someone speaks. So I think that's what causes a lot of problems between devotees, is that they look at the Vaishnava qualities, the traditional ones, but they don't read the exceptions, like Vichrasura and so many other pastimes. So that's why I find it relative, and these points come up all the time. I'm not sure if you could.
Well, that was like asking my question. Answering your own question, but yeah. I was just thinking that it also depends on your relationship with that person, whether, you know, because it's very difficult to ascertain what's respectful or not when it comes to like devotees and spiritual personalities. Like if we read this pastime with Madhu Mangal saying all these, you know, seemingly very like insulting words to you know, the other cowherd friends, even to Balaram, you know, saying that you're a prince without a throne and so many other things. You know, like that could, you know, from the outside perspective, one might say that that looks very disrespectful. but it's like, you know, when we're dealing with devotees and Krishna and things like that, it's very difficult to ascertain what's respectful or not in different circumstances. And generally, unless you're in like a position of like instructing or being like the person who's guiding a particular person and trying to help them, you know, like correct their consciousness or something, it's usually better that you yourself, if you're like a peer with someone, first of all, it's very difficult for a peer to hear another peer's like corrections. That like doesn't always go in. So it's probably not your service to try to correct that person's disrespect or their whatever fault that somebody might see in them. But usually it's better that if you see that there might be an issue or something, you go to somebody who they are like, who might be in that position for them to help like correct certain behaviors, and they would be more receptive from hearing it from that person who they look up to. So I was just considering that when you're thinking about other people disrespecting and not disrespecting. It's most of the time it's not in our service. I mean, it can be if we are in that position, but most of the time it's not, and it's better to just.
Thank you. That was the conclusion on the pastime of the Bhrigu Muni and the Chaitanya Bhagavat. It says that with the conclusion, whether you should judge someone or not judge someone, the conclusion is one should behave humbly with everyone in body, mind, and words. Tri nada pisuni chena. So that was the conclusion of that pastime. So thank you.
There you go. Okay. Anything else? All right. We'll end here. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.